This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. So you see, our brains are trying to tell us something all the time. Our hour-long journey through the brain continues now where the brain and the ears meet. Seth Horowitz is an auditory neuroscientist at Brown University and the author of The Universal Sense, How Hearing Shapes the Mind.
You hear not just what you need to hear. You need to hear what's surrounding you and what could be an information source in your environment and what could be a problem in your environment. For many years, it was thought that a lot of animals were just sort of mating detectors. They just heard the sounds of their own species, like bullfrogs. So they had ears that seemed well-tuned to just picking up what was important to bullfrogs, the sound of other bullfrogs. But a colleague of mine, Dick Fay, pointed out that if you only hear what your own species makes a sound, you're going to be eaten by the first predator that makes a sound outside that. So it's been this sort of auditory arms race between environmental detection, what you can mechanically pick up, and what your brain does with it. When you get to humans or primates, we have a lot of additional processing material, so we tend to have quite ornate auditory communication. So do cetaceans, whales, dolphins, they're very auditory. But then again, you can look at bats. Bats build their world from sound. They build three-dimensional models of the world just using sound, but their brain's the size of a peanut. So it's not the mass, it's not the volume, it's what you do with it and how you specialize with it.
Is it the case that ears hear and brains listen?
Yes. The ears are really mechanical systems, and once they have to get past the ears and into the brain to start parsing out what part of the sound is important. You can actually record from a brain, if you record very, very low down in the area where the auditory nerve is coming into the brain, if you drop an electrode in there, you can actually hear the sound that is coming in because most of the nerves for some sounds are very specifically trying to match that sound cycle for cycle. This is called a cochlear microphonic, so that you can listen to what the early part of your brain is listening to. By the time you get to higher centers, ones that recognize someone's voice or a piece of music, it doesn't sound anything like the sound anymore. It's a representation.
Oh, that's amazing. How does the brain of someone who cannot hear differ from the brain of someone who can hear? We've certainly heard stories of if people lose their hands, an enormous amount of their brain is suddenly unutilized because the hand has such a huge impact on the sort of species of human, and the brain is a big part of that.
What happens is you start, well, the brain isn't extraordinarily plastic, which not like in little shiny, brightly colored pieces of blob, but very flexible and very changeable. If you lose anything, eventually what will happen is your brain will start invading the unused areas if they're not damaged so that it will use it for other things. So someone who goes blind will have better auditory response. Someone who is born deaf has never had an auditory experience, but often they have better visual attention. Someone who loses hearing rapidly will also see that kind of shift. But one thing that's problematic is that one of the problems of being a mammal is we have great high-frequency hearing, but we lose it as we get older. This is a normal part of aging. It's called presbycusis. And because your brain is constantly trying to rescale what you can hear into what you've lost, a lot of people who lose their hearing at the high end don't know it. And so they're constantly thinking, people are muttering or not talking clearly or talking behind my back. And a lot of older people, some who have been diagnosed as having paranoia or dementia, a lot of it has to do apparently with hearing loss. They really can't hear what's going on anymore, but they're convinced that they can.
We're speaking with Seth Horowitz, part of our Takeaway Journey Through the Brain. We're talking with Seth Horowitz, an auditory neuroscientist at Brown University, the author of The Universal Sense, How Hearing Shapes the Mind. In order to help us better understand what happens in the brain when it encounters sound, he's brought some sound clips for us to listen to. Here's the first one, which he calls head stretch. Ouch.
I know. It's noisy and noise, Ben, but did you hear the differences between each pulse?
A little bit.
Right. It sounded like either the sound was moving slightly further apart, or For some people, it sounds like their head is actually getting bigger. It very much depends on the nature of your equipment, how you're listening, and where you are in space, if you're listening to that in a room. But each of those pulses was only different from the previous pulse by 300 millionths of a second. This is what the thing that this points out is how fast hearing is. Now, hearing vision is incredibly slow, and yet we're visual creatures. We think at about the same rate that we see, and it takes you about a quarter of a second at least to be able to see something, recognize, and do something about it. So 4 frames per second is visual speed at high speed. With hearing, it goes anywhere from 10 to 100 times faster.
Wow.
And that sound that you just heard, the differences between each pulse was millionths of a second. Your ears can pick up these tiny little differences, and it's critically important for being able to figure out where a sound is coming from.
Fascinating. All right, so here's another clip. You call this cocktail party.
The cocktail party phenomenon is a very fascinating one that shows how good your brain is at picking relevant sounds out. That was just a mix of a standard noisy party that I usually hide. But there's a way that it shows how good your brain is at picking sound out of noise, and it's much better than how you do it visually. This is sort of the equivalent of Where's Waldo, which can take me minutes to try to find the little guy, if I can find him at all. Sound, you can do it much faster. If you listen to this next one, see if you can pick out anything familiar or relevant.
Okay, I think I'm hearing it. I'm hearing a couple of names in there.
It would happen even faster if they happened to have been your name. The cocktail party phenomena shows those sounds, the names, were mixed at the same level as the rest of the noise in the background. But things that are relevant, like a person's name, particularly your own, or familiar, like hearing your own name, your ears will actually pull it out of the background.
So I actually know no one named Marco or Wendy, but because they're names and they have an idea associated with them, my ear will grab them rather than just the ambient noise.
Exactly. I mean, there may have been people saying names in that background, but they were not anywhere near the center of the sound field. So something that's relevant or familiar or might be important, you will pull out. If you're at that crowded cocktail party and someone says your name across the room, you'll hear it.
Finally, Seth, what is the new science of the brain and the latest technology and tools that you have helping us to understand about hearing?
What's really been amazing is when I wrote my book, we used to have these little chats whenever we'd go to conferences, and we would talk about what's going to happen next. And the idea was, well, somebody will be able to generate hair cells in a dish from basic stem cells. Hair cells are the sensory cells. And we all said, okay, it'll take 5 or 10 years. And by the time the book came out, it had already occurred. People had taken stem cells grown in a dish and implanted them into a living animal, and the animal's hearing was restored. Stem cell technology is going to be an amazing tool for restoring hearing. But what it ties into is the point, we've reached a point in neuroscience where you just don't have a bunch of people studying one system. You don't have to grow up in science and just study vision. We're coming to the point where we're beginning to put everything together. All the pieces, vision, hearing, touch, taste, we're beginning to assemble it, and it's now okay to start talking about the multisensory world. Because you don't just hear, you don't just see, you don't just touch. You form the world from all of your senses integrated together, and that's the revolution that's beginning to happen in neuroscience. Our technology has gotten good enough that we're beginning to see the brain not as a series of parts, but as a whole.
Seth Horowitz, auditory neuroscientist at Brown University and the author of The Universal Sense, How Hearing Shapes the Mind. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our Hour on the Brain continues in just a moment.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.